Hello and welcome to Nancy Goodaim the Space Ranger. This is chapter 23. It's a longer one, so you'll need to set aside about 20 minutes or just be listening for about 20 minutes to get through it. And if that is your mission, a hen, a daw, is a tree, and away we go. Bart looked out at the rolling waves. He could see horizon in every direction, but little else. His sense was that the sun was beginning to set, but, consumed as he had been from the bickering in the last chapter, and with a belly full of spontaniger meat, he hadn't really been gauging. "Is that sun setting?" he muttered. Now, if you have never sailed across the Jupiterian Sea of Uncertainty on top of a spontaniger transportation robot, then you will have to imagine how lonely a thing it is. On the evening of the third day of the first human expedition to another planet, European Space Agency mission specialist Bart McMurrow found out. Hours before, and just before the end of chapter 22, he had been enjoying his first proper meal in days, which should have been a moment of contentment. Unfortunately, he had unilaterally quarrelled with his colleague mission specialist Nancy McGinley, and two Martians, namely a waitress-slash-astronaut called Martina Ruddlesplitch, and a sheriff. All four had travelled from Mars to rescue kidnapped colleagues. In the case of European Space Agency mission specialist Bart McMurrow and European Space Agency mission specialist Nancy Goodaim McGinley, they did so with the intention of finding and rescuing their kidnapped mission commander, a man named Jerry Staunton, and the three-person crew of a sister spacecraft to their own San Laika 1, known as San Laika 2. In the case of the two Martians, they were ostensibly going to rescue a pair of kidnapped colleagues known as Buddadaw and Flirnt, but as with all these things, the reality of what they were up to was different. The Martian known as Martina Ruddlesplitch had just wanted to see if Martian interplanetary exploration was possible, and the sheriff wanted to be at the centre of interplanetary exploration if it succeeded. And he also secretly admired the Jupiterian autocrat named Sosman Borkstapel, who was behind the kidnappings. As things stood, Nancy, Martina and the sheriff were wandering back into the forest of Parburps in an attempt to free three Jupiterians from a wizard spell. Neither Nancy, Martina nor the sheriff were thinking of Bart or his predicament. This was because of the not insignificant properties of the Ladder of Insignificance, which caused anyone carrying or holding it to become invisible in the eyes and minds of every living creature, except robots, who experience the universe as a series of unambiguous, purposeful events and cannot be blinded to anything affecting those events, such as the way with robots. While Nancy, Martina and the sheriff wandered, European Space Agency mission specialist Bart McMurrow was footing slowly towards a warehouse in the Jupiterian seaside settlement of Clasper Brone and drifting into an existential quandary. "Cast a cold eye on life. On death, horsemen pass by," he said. "Bleep," replied robot FZB3158. "Ah, what would you know about it?" "Bleep, arp, bleep," replied robot FZB3158. Bart looked around him. The roughly 5 foot square half open topside of a spontaniger transportation robot was now his world. The sea stretched as far as the horizon in every direction. Bart took stock of that world. It included a half open door to an almost full compartment containing plucked spontaligers, some metal hydraulics and cabling, shiny steel panelling and a magic ladder. The foot of the robot FZB3158's propeller, his full belly and the gentle rolling waves made him drift into a half daydream. He was now regretting his overly hasty decision to part company with Nancy and the two Martians. There seemed to be little he could do about it. "I'm sick of outer space. All there is either a horrible glimpse or this."
"Bleep."
"You always say that."
"Arp."
"Ah, whatever. I'm not talking to you. There's no way I'm talking to our robot. Your idea of a bit of fun would be swapping round the zeros in the number 400.
"Bleep."
"You're only saying that because you know it's true." Bart shuffled the ladder and himself so that they were both wedged into a slightly different position in the half-open top door of the internal storage compartment of robot FZB3158. He had hoped it would make him more comfortable. It didn't. "Where the hell am I anyway?"
"Sopadam 8, 5, 6, Sumptalab 5, Ornikel 0, in utmost distancing from program destination."
"What?"
"Sopalam 8, 5, 6, Sumptalab 5, Ornikel 0, in utmost distancing from program destination."
"I didn't know you could talk, robot. Why didn't you say something earlier?"
"It is unpleasing for you to have asked such a question. Are you from the Robot Directorate?
No, I'm from Earth. Well, Mars. But Earth before that. Oh, said Robot FZB3158. Robot FZB3158 had a very slow and deliberate robotic voice. It had been designed and created to convey facts relating to the transportation of whistling spontaneous, and to do so in a very matter-of-fact way. Despite this, the tone of speed in the O suggested disappointment.
What do you mean, O? Asked Bart.
O, nothing.
What do you mean by O, nothing?
I thought you were from the Robot Directorate. If you were, it would have meant I could have told you that this was the 1688th time I had undertaken the Clasperone Spontaliger Supply Route 4, and that I had optimised my functionality to an increased efficiency some 0.381 in magnitude over those trips.
Bart looked out at the surrounding sea. The horizon in one direction had a faint yellow glow of an approaching sunset. The flat metal panelling on the top side of Robot FZB3158 was not designed for comfort, and he was starting to get sore.
It is good that I improved my efficiency to that degree. This is on the upper range of expectations, but still within the predicted lifespan of my internal frame, and also the mineral-resistant coating of my external cladding. Slightly towards the upper range, in fact.
So what? You expect me to be impressed?
I do not expect you to be impressed, because your feeble living mind cannot process information like a robot. I expect you to be bored, which is less than optimal. If you were from the Robot Directorate, it would have been more than optimal, because you would have properly registered and acknowledged the facts of my optimization.
Bart looked out at the sea again. Ah, shut your pie hole, or whatever it is you use to speak. If I had the chance, I'd throw you overboard.
You would damage your central muscular configuration in the process of doing so, rendering it less than optimal. And also, I am designed to float, and I am already immersed in the water.
Do you not know how futile this all is, robot? You take this spiddly bonks to another place and then you come back for more. And then you do it again. Who cares? Why didn't you just take the Jupiterians to the spiddly bonks and then you wouldn't have to do it anymore? And there'd be no point in you. In fact, there is no point in you. I saw two more robots on the bank of the stream outside that old Goat McGasbug's place. Sure, they could have moved the Spontaliers. They'd probably do so anyway. So there's no need for you. There's no point in you. There's no point in any of this. Like, what use is all the water under us? None. It's just a big waste of space for you to go futtling on top of in one big non-system of pointlessness. And anyways, who cares about spiddly fongs? Not you, not me. They're useless. Although they are tasty. Well, maybe spiddly fongs are important. But you or me aren't. And anyways, you can't even taste them. You wouldn't know the difference between a fillet steak tasting Jupiterian whistling creature and a biscuit made out of gravel. So there, robot. There you have it. Your existence, in all its glory. One boring, unnecessary trip to fetch dead creatures after another. Each one bringing nothing, only the promise of doing it again. For nothing. That's all there is to it, robot. That's all there is to either of us, which is nothing. Nothing at all, because everything is pointless. Just like you and your stupid optimalizing. You know what, robot? I reckon if the chief robot bottle washer, the directivisor...
The robot directorate, and it is not one but many,
interrupted Robot FZB3158.
Whatever, it doesn't matter. One is as good as many. They're all pointless anyways, just like you are, and so am I, so there. Now you have it, you're useless. Sorry, useless and pointless.
Bart nodded his head in agreement to himself and looked out at the sea again. He spat into the ocean like a noisy full stop to his rant. The sun was beginning to set. Robot FZB3158 decided to make one last articulation.
The objects for transportation are classified as spontaligers, not spiddly bonks,
noted Robot FZB3158.
And they will be delivered to McGasbug's warehouse B in Clasperone in approximately 4 planetary rotations, where they will be removed and shelved. And I will return to location Spotteron 318 Somptalab 5 Ornicle 0.1 for 1,322 more iterations.
Robot FZB3158 determined that any continued conversation with its unexpected but benign intruder was of no benefit to the transportation of Spontaligers. It then deactivated its vocal output utensil and moved its audio detectors into power-saving mode. Such is the way with robots. Meanwhile, far away from the sea of uncertainty and thoughts of futility, the evening was also starting to make itself known in the Forest of Proverbs, where European Space Agency mission specialist Nancy McGinley, Martian waitress slash astronaut Martina Rundlesplitch, and a Martian sheriff were making their way upstream along one side of the valley known as Pollen Yasp. They carried with them one half-eaten Whistling Spontaligger, two crossbows and a badly thought-out plan to free the three remaining members of the Hobla Granicker Defence League, who had been trapped in a cloud of green plasma by a Jupiterian wizard known as Obleron.
"Remember," reminded the sheriff, "the wizard may be powerful, more powerful than me, which is extremely powerful indeed, but if we ignore him, he will go away. So keep your eyes peeled and don't see him if he's there."
Nancy, Martina and the sheriff were following a rough path just inside the tree line next to the left bank of the stream. The sheriff was leading the way and talking as he walked.
"Martina, once we are upstream as far as those three Jupiterian idiots, I want you to rescue them from that spell they are under. Nancy, I want you to keep an eye out for the wizard and not let me know if you see him. I will supervise both of you doing those things."
"How will I break the spell?"
"Ah, now, Martina, you can't expect me to think of everything."
Nancy did not respond to the sheriff's direction. Her mind was elsewhere. Something told her to pay attention to the crossbow she carried and the darkening forest around her. She silently cocked and loaded the weapon and moved several metres right of the path Martina and the sheriff were following, which placed her deeper into the lengthening evening shadows. "There's something glowing ahead."
"One thing or three things?"
"I think it's three things."
"Good, well spotted, Martina. Run on up and make sure. And if it is those three Jupiterian simpletons, unmagic them. I'll stay here and make sure you do it properly."
What Martina had seen was a green glow roughly 20 metres further upstream, close to the tree line on the same bank as herself, Nancy and the sheriff. She took four careful steps past the sheriff and strained her eyes. She made out the three shaking and levitating bodies of Bip, Morkador and Myokta, and then turned back to the sheriff.
"It is three things, the Jupiterians. What will I do?"
"Are you deaf, woman? Unmagic them."
I don't know how. Could you ask the gut how you do that?"
The sheriff gave a loud cough, a disapproving sigh, an eye roll that neither Martina nor Nancy could have seen, and finally tutted.
"Okay,"
he said, and cocked his head sideways. Nancy crouched down into the shadows. She had been paying only the slightest attention to the distant green cloud-shrouded Jupiterians and Martina's dilemma, and the sheriff's reluctant consultation with the creator of all things. She focused her gaze from the sight of the crossbow to the edge of the stream and surrounding forest and moved in a low, full circle as she did. Someone was there watching them. She could feel it.
"Well, Martina," said the sheriff finally, "the gut says you will have to figure that out for yourself. For this is the forest of Proverbs, and as the saying goes, you can lead a Martian astronaut to water, but you can't make her unmagic three upright vibrating Jupiterians from a green plasma prison. So, you will have to figure out how to free those Jupiterians yourself. It is the will of the gut, but don't worry, I will watch you."
"Thanks, sheriff," said Martina. She's not really sure what she should have been thankful for, but took comfort and pride from the fact that the creator of the universe had seen fit to mention her name to its local representative. She started walking the 20 metres or so that were between her and the Jupiterians. Nancy heard something fizzle between the advancing Martina and the green glow upstream. She trained her crossbow on the source of it. There was something in the trees just beyond the bank to the right of Martina, and in front of where Nancy was crouching, it glowed green.
"Good work, Martina," shouted the sheriff. "Keep it up," he added. "I'm watching you."
The something in the trees that Nancy had spotted stood up and stepped towards Martina and held out the palm of a green, sparkling right hand.
"The wizard Oberon is here, sheriff,"
yelled Martina. Nancy didn't move from where she was hiding, but trained her weapon on the glowing green dress-suited wizard and waited.
"You are supposed to ignore him, Martina. Do you not remember the plan we came up with at the end of chapter 22? How could you have forgotten? I reminded you before we got here."
"Sorry, sheriff, it's just that he's coming at me with a green glowing hand that is spitting out sparks, and it looks like it could do damage."
"Just ignore it and he'll go away."
"I'm trying, sheriff, but it's not working."
"Then ignore harder, woman."
Martina didn't respond. The wizard's hand made contact with her, and there was a burst of white light which threw her into the air back towards the sheriff. She landed on her arse on the shingled bank and stayed sitting.
"Sorry, sheriff," she coughed. "The wizard is hard not to notice."
"Well, you managed well enough before the wizard appeared,"
said the sheriff. The wizard sidestepped Martina and began marching downstream to where the sheriff was standing and Nancy was hiding. He held up a glowing green hand as he moved.
"Prepare for some close-up magic, fat man," he yelled.
"Prepare for nothing. I don't see anything or hear anything. And if someone did say something, I didn't hear it,"
yelled the sheriff. Nancy kept her crossbow trained on the wizard as he approached the sheriff. He was now less than 10 metres away. She waited. The sheriff didn't move, but pretended to be inspecting one of the nearby trees.
"I wonder, do these trees shed their glass fuels?"
he said. The wizard stopped in front of the sheriff. His right hand fizzed and glowed with green light and sent sparks spitting in every direction. I have no ears for the gibberish of an extraterrestrial, especially not one that caused me to break my wand and be stuck wearing dirty underpants. That itch. Now, taste my rat! A ball of white light pulsed in the wizard's outstretched palm and was pierced with a dunk, which was followed by the wizard jumping up and down on the spot, shaking his right hand, which had a crossbow bolt stuck through it. The wizard bent double, collapsed to his knees, and gripped his right hand with his left hand.
Ah!
He yelled.
Now, Martina, advised the sheriff. Did you see me? Well, that is how you properly ignore someone.
Nancy loaded another bolt into her crossbow, stepped out from where she had been hiding, and walked over to the wizard. The wizard eyed her crossbow as she approached and bowed his head.
I can get used to dirty jocks, he croaked. You must ignore the wizard, Nancy, like I did, and Martina didn't do.
The sheriff gestured upstream, where a dazed Martina was still sitting on the shingle bank.
You see what happened to her? Don't let her be you, Nancy, as Martina is useless. Be sure to listen to me properly the next time, won't you, Martina? Although, you do seem to have freed the Jupiterians. Well done. It's good that you can do something right.
Nancy glanced up to see a tired and bedraggled trio of Jupiterians walking downstream along the bank towards them. The wizard looked at Nancy and then at the sheriff.
They're free because your friend just broke my magic hand, fat man. First you kill my washerwoman, then you break my wand, and now my good magic hand. What am I going to do with just a bad magic left hand? Card tricks? Is that what you expect me to do now?
I can't hear you, and neither can anyone else, replied the sheriff. Because you don't exist.
The wizard coughed and gave a sarcastic
ha. Ha, nothing, said the sheriff.
Ha, something, said the wizard. Because it's getting dark, and the marmstickles will be out. And I heard they've got a new prime on Fongler. One that's nowhere near as lazy as the last one. And I've no magic to stop them. So we're all going to die. Which means the joke is on you, fat man.
No, it's not, replied the sheriff. Wait, what do you mean, wizard? I mean, whoever you are.
I mean that as soon as it gets dark, you lot are going to be ripped apart by marmstickles. Which would serve you right for coming over to my planet and killing my washerwoman.
Nancy looked up at the tree canopy. She could see three of the four Jupiterian moons in gaps between the branches. Darkness was on its way. She looked downstream in the direction they had just came. The path was now hidden by shadows. She took in what was around her, which, apart from the purple forest of Proverbs Floor and the thick tree growth bordering the shingle banks of the stream, was a dazed-looking Martian waitress-slash-astronaut called Martina Ruddlespitch standing on the shingle branch, brushing herself down. Three dazed and bedraggled members of the Hobble Granagher Defence League called Bip, Morkador and Miakta on their way towards her. They were now level with the dazed-looking Martina Ruddlespitch, which put them about 10 metres upstream from where Nancy and a disgruntled-looking magicless wizard were respectively standing and sitting, and a slightly worried-looking sheriff.
Ripped apart? Asked the sheriff.
Yes, repeated the magicless Oberon.
Watch out, Nancy, yelled Bip,
who was now 8 metres away from Nancy, the sheriff and the wizard. Bip ran the last 5 of those 8 metres and spent the final 3 metres aiming a flying kick, flying through the air and landing the kick into the upper body of the injured magicless wizard, who then went,
"Ugh!"
Bip quickly jumped back to his feet to fire another kick when Nancy yelled for him to stop.
Leave the wizard, she said. He's lost his magic. It's getting dark. We need to get away from the stream.
Bip stood back from the winded, injured, magicless wizard Oberon and glanced over to Morkador and Miakta, who had walked to within 5 metres of him.
Lads, the wizard's lost his magic. He's completely falurumaless. Let's torture him and send him off to find Sosman with a message that we're coming for him, he said.
Morkador and Miakta walk over to Bip, Nancy and the wizard and kick the wizard in the arm and upper back, causing the wizard to go, ouch and ugh, respectively.
Leave the wizard alone, repeated Nancy. He has no magic and is about to be eaten by marmstickles. And we will be too if we don't move.
Good point, said Bip.
Yes, agreed Morkador.
It is getting dark, agreed Miakta.
Yes, it is Miakta, said Bip.
So what's all this about being ripped apart? Asked the sheriff.
Marmstickles, sheriff, said Martina. She had struggled to her feet and was now standing next to Morkador and Miakta, who were in turn standing behind Bip, who was facing the injured magicless wizard Oberon, who was flanked by Nancy and a worried-looking sheriff.
Marmstickles!
Asked the sheriff.
Yes, sheriff. Do you not remember the night prowling marmstickles? They'll be down the stream soon, lots of them, possibly even the same ones from Chapter 8. The ones that killed Chuz Rondelpeck and would have probably killed you too if Nancy hadn't been so quick with a crossbow, reminded Martina.
Ha ha ha, cackled the wizard Oberon. The irony of it all.
The extraterrestrials that killed my washerwoman are now about to be eaten by marauding Jupiterian marmstigals. It'll be worth dying with dirty underpants on to see the look on your faces.
Something told Nancy to load a bolt into her crossbow. She could hear a faint nungle, nungle, nungle increasing in volume somewhere in the trees on the opposite side of the river. She looked down at the injured wizard, who was sitting and holding his crossbow bolt pierced right hand in his left hand. Nancy leant over, pulled the wizard's right arm behind his back, placed an ASA-issue silicone on steel boot onto the arm, and ripped the bolt free. She then loaded at her crossbow. It's too late. We're being watched from the other side of the stream. Nongle, nongle, nongle. You're exactly right, Nancy. That is the nongling of predatory marmstigals. But you're exactly wrong, too, said Bip. Because remember, this is the Forest of Proverbs. And in the Forest of Proverbs, we have a saying, well, more of a proverb. And it goes, if the intention you have is to save time, then go for a ride on Spungordial Vine. It's not go for a ride, Gum Gallagher, interrupted Mercador. It's take a ride, interrupted Mjokta. That's what I meant, said Bip. Well, it's not what you said, said Mercador. Nongle, nongle, clump. What happened next happened remarkably quickly. Nancy, Martina and the Sheriff found themselves being wrapped in vines by either Bip, Mercador or Mjokta. The combination of darkness, speed and general sense of panic meant it was hard to tell who did the selecting, cutting or wrapping. But it was done with great speed, and all three were rapidly elevated to a large upper tree branch in the Forest of Proverbs. They were no less quickly joined by Bip, Mjokta and Mercador. Clump! Ah! Gobble! Well, that's the end of Oberon, noted Bip. Is anyone hungry? He added. We ate earlier, said Nancy. Yes, said the Sheriff. He had silently relieved himself in his trousers during the rapid nighttime marmstigal evading elevation. I was keen for it not to be noticed.
Tell them about your minty meal, Nancy, he added.
We had some whistling spontaligers from the shed at the back of Natey and Biddy McGaswig's home place, explained Nancy, though Natey is dead.
You ate spontaligers from Brazy McGaswig's shed?
Cried Bip, Mjokta and Mercador in unison. Yes, said Nancy. We did, agreed Martina.
Nancy will fill you in, added the Sheriff.
And she didn't kill you? Asked Bip.
No, said Nancy. Well, she was in the toilet at the time. Well, you were lucky, said Bip. Breezy McGaspard doesn't take prisoners when it comes to spontaligers. Herself and poor Natey are the biggest spontaliger exporters in the Forest of Proverbs. In fact, they're the only spontaliger exporters in the Forest of Proverbs, with good reason. Nancy waited to hear what that good reason was, but Bip just went silent for a minute.
Although sometimes she lets you have some in return for doing a bit of work in her garden, he added. We should call around in the morning and see if she needs any gardening done. There's probably something needs doing now that Natey is dead.
There is, said Mercador.
Probably, added Mjokta.
She might be able to know of a safe way through the stormy hills too, noted Bip.
She might, said Mercador.
And she might tell us that if we do a good job in her garden, added Mjokta. And that was it for the end of twilight on the third day of the first human expedition to another planet. A large, wide, high branch in the Forest of Proverbs. Three tired and hungry members of the Hoblagraniker Defence League. A Martian waitress/astronaut called Martina Ruddlespitch. A quietly embarrassed, damp Martian sheriff. European Space Agency mission specialist Nancy Goodame McGinley. And European Space Agency mission specialist Bart McMurrow. Holding a ladder on top of Spontaliger transportation robot FZB-3158. In the middle of an existential crisis. In the dark. In the middle of the sea of uncertainty. On Jupiter.
All right, thank you for listening to that. That was a long one, and fair play for sticking it out if you did, and fair play if you're sticking with this story. There'll be another chapter in 2 weeks. They're going to be every 2 weeks now, I think, coming in around 20 minutes, because I think that's probably the best formula for it. In any case, chat to you then.